Hello, this is Peter Baxter, Editor of Developmental Medicine and Child Neurology. It's a great pleasure to introduce this podcast. In it, we will be discussing the article, Chronic Pain, Fatigue and Depressive Symptoms in Adults with Spastic Bilateral Cerebral Palsy by Van der Slot and her colleagues, which is appearing in the September issue of the journal. It will be discussed by Dr. Wilma Van der Slot of the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine and Physical Therapy, Erasmus Medical Center, Rotterdam, who also works at the Rangdom Rehabilitation Center, Rotterdam, in the Netherlands, who's one of the authors, and Dr. Don Bilou, who is nurse researcher at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare, St. Paul, Minnesota, in the USA. Please, can we start with you, Wilma, to discuss the background?
Well, thank you for inviting me for this podcast. We started our study because our clinical experience is that pain, fatigue and depressive symptoms occur frequently in adults with CP and are often combined with functional loss. And our Dutch Patients Association BOSC had the same experience. At the start of our research project, these were their only symptoms and specifically their co-occurrence was scarce. And we found it of relevance to study symptom clusters, considering the frequency and variety of health issues in adults with cerebral palsy, and also to find potential targets for a more holistic approach of prevention and intervention. In our research project, we studied adults with bilateral CP because we hypothesized a higher risk of TSD symptoms in this subtype of CP. In summary, we investigated the prevalence and co-occurrence of chronic pain, fatigue and depressive symptoms in adults with specific bilateral CP without severe cognitive impairment and explored associations of chronic pain and fatigue with depressive symptoms and daily functioning. We recruited the adults from a large area of the Netherlands, thus we recruited not only amongst adults who were currently receiving care at rehabilitation centers. In total, 56 adults participated with a mean age of 36 years and 5 months, cross motor functioning levels 1 to 4. We defined chronic pain as continuous or intermittent musculoskeletal or neuromuscular pain lasting longer than 3 months, which is according to the International Association of Pain. And we assessed per localization information on duration, frequency, and possible causes of pain. We explored severity of fatigue by the fatigue severity scale and nature of fatigue by the multidimensional fatigue inventory. Furthermore, we assessed depressive symptoms by the Center for Epidemiological Studies Depression Scale. And the Life Habits Questionnaire was used to assess performance in daily activities and social participation. Our main outcome measures were chronic pain and severe fatigue and depressive symptoms. We compared the results with reference values of Dutch healthy samples because prevalences of these symptoms are high in general populations, and we explored associations by using multivariable logistic regression analysis and bootstrap analysis. The study sample had a higher prevalence than Dutch healthy reference samples of chronic pain, 75% versus 39%, and also of depressive symptoms, 25% versus 12%. 1 out of 5 adults was fatigued, and a further 2 out of 5 were severely fatigued. And both severity of fatigue and nature of fatigue subscale scores were significantly higher compared to the healthy reference samples. Chronic pain and severe fatigue co-occurred in 34% and in combination with depressive symptoms in 16% of the participants. And by regression analysis, we found that severity of fatigue was associated with depressive symptoms. We found no association in our study between chronic pain or fatigue and daily functioning. Taken together, these findings suggest that the relatively young adults with specific bilateral CP are severely affected by these 3 symptoms. And I'd like to discuss this with you.
I was very interested to read the paper at the time that this manuscript came to me. We were involved with a review of all current literature describing in any way prevalence of pain among individuals with developmental disabilities, including cerebral palsy. And we were on a similar trajectory of feeling that the clinical impression is certainly that children and even more so adults with cerebral palsy have severe contributions of pain to their suffering, and musculoskeletal pain seeming to be the obvious source of this pain. So turning to the published literature to find how much this has been described in detail, it was a great surprise to find that the prevalence we were finding in the papers, on the one hand, the description of pain prevalence has been studied in so many different ways that it's difficult to make comparisons across studies. There's a recent piece by Landmark in the journal Pain in July of this year, which corroborated this observation that pain prevalence studies in the general population are all conducted quite differently. So our sense of chronic pain prevalence in the general population is already not well described. However, the paper by Vanderslot makes clear that even when we get a cross-sectional view of a subset of the individuals with cerebral palsy, the pain is serious, and even without the correlations found between specifically chronic pain and fatigue, the descriptions of their painful experiences are quite compelling.
I agree about the remarks on chronic pain. Well, as you mentioned, our study is limited because of the cross-sectional design, but we also noted that, that the amount of pain is very large in this population. And if I look at this study and also daily practice, I have the impression that chronic pain syndromes could be related to more specific causes instead of mainly chronic pain syndromes in the general population. That might be a difference. And I wonder what you think about it.
Yes, we're trying to focus our research efforts now into matching up with efforts in the general population related to chronic pain as far as getting a better glimpse of the likely mechanisms of chronic pain experiences. We've been reviewing the work of Clifford Wolf as a good organizing point of understanding pain syndromes resulting from pain mechanisms and helping us to, as I have said, unravel in cerebral palsy specifically what are likely sources of pain. If we consider that it's been increasingly well established that acute pain untreated, acute nociceptive pain, is likely to contribute to an ongoing chronic pain state, considering that children with cerebral palsy, just looking at spasticity-related pain, but perhaps adding in all of the treatment and diagnostic-related origins of pain, and then other conditions that can cause nociceptive pain in the short term, can be resulting in these individuals having their neurosensory systems being stimulated by nociception, perhaps from the very beginning, as early as their cerebral palsy symptoms present. So then thinking about how do we manage these chronic pain syndromes in children and then in adults, it seems that we have our work cut out for us to be using ever-developing pain assessment and neurosensory techniques, including quantitative sensory testing, which is used in chronic pain clinics, thinking about getting better look at sensory functioning in addition to that, perhaps epidermal skin biopsies, looking at fiber types and fiber densities. These are the types of directions we're trying to gradually expand into so that we could better treat and also better prevent the episodes that might be generating the chronic pain syndromes.
Well, I think in our study we looked also at possible causes of chronic pain, and we had similar results in that people related their pain to muscle cramps in 45% of the sample, and also found a variety of other possible causes. So I think it's worth to always try to diagnose a possible cause in the adults with CP. And furthermore, I agree on the research. I think we need to do more research on underlying mechanisms, especially at young age, to prevent the development of chronic pain syndromes. Because what I also see in clinical practice and in this study that people have a chronic non-specific pain syndrome. Furthermore, I think the same holds true for fatigue. Also, fatigue is very complex and multidimensional, just as pain. And also, in respect to fatigue, we need to start research on underlying mechanisms. And I think we can use especially also results in acquired brain injury, for example, stroke, to find reasons why people are fatigued. We have some preventive measures in the meanwhile while we are waiting for the results of scientific research. We can use information from neurorehabilitation treatments like antispastic treatments, from chronic pain treatments, multidisciplinary treatments, or cognitive behavioral therapy, which was also in the paper of Jensen in 2006. And same holds true for treatment of fatigue and depressive symptoms.
I just want to jump in that what we find when we're assessing pain in children and adults, but starting with children, they're often reticent to admit that they have pain. We might ask them, do you have any pain today? And they'll tell us no. And we'll ask them if they had pain last week, and they'll tell us no. And then we'll ask, what's the worst pain they've had recently? And they'll say, well, I usually have very severe pain each time I have my physical therapy, as high as an 8 or a 10. But that isn't the first response they offer when we first ask them if they have pain. So I think that the persistence of the clinicians in inquiring in a variety of ways about pain is really essential in getting these children and adults to acknowledge the pain that they're experiencing.
Yes, I think people get accustomed to pain and fatigue, and well, some of them will not mention it, other mention it, but find it very hard to unravel their complaints. And as is written in the paper, for example, pain, people have multiple pain sites and multiple causes. So that, together with the multidimensional concept of fatigue, I think it's of importance to do a very thorough physical examination and clinical interview on to unravel the causes in an individual patient. I find in daily practice often treatable causes of both pain and fatigue can be very easy, like problems with sleeping or medication. And the other part, what we were discussing before, is that some parts are very difficult to unravel, like the chronic non-specific pain or chronic fatigue. So we need to educate healthcare workers on these aspects and also learn how to recognize problems in combination with a variety of health issues. Because even the adults themselves find it difficult to say, well, am I depressed or fatigued? And another step is that we need to find treatment options.
Dr. Vanderslot, do you use any pain interference or functional impact scales when you're assessing pain?
In daily practice, you mean? Or
yes.
In research? No, well, we have not a questionnaire or a list, but we do have standard questions.
Very good, because I appreciate when associating fatigue and depression, trying to better pinpoint the meaning of pain in individuals' lives. I think when we're assessing intensity or severity of pain, that individuals are often looking for modest gains, as you're talking about pain management options, that often these individuals are accustomed to pain to a degree that they're, when the pain becomes quite severe, they're not looking for the pain to be completely extinguished. They're looking for it to be backed off to a manageable degree. So that's, I think, part of the accommodation that these individuals have in their relationship with pain.
Yes, I agree. I noticed it as well.
So we need to be on the lookout more and then try and break it down into the different types of pain, likely causes, and then try and treat each of those individually. What about the combined effects when you've got depression on top of pain, say? Won't that affect what you can do or how you do it?
Yes, well, we need to do the things we discussed before, and studying the underlying mechanisms, trying to find treatable causes. But in the end, I expect that we still have children or adults with cerebral palsy with a variety of health issues which are not easy to solve. And we can't wait for all the results of scientific research. And then we need a more holistic approach, for example, a cognitive behavioral therapy or maybe psychomotor therapy or things like that, a treatment which learns them to cope with their complaints and also act in a sensible way, not, for example, physical overuse and aggravate your complaints.
Do you also have specialist pain teams who can play a role here?
I think that can be an option. In our rehabilitation center, we have specialized pain teams, but they're more focused on non-specific chronic pain. But I think we can use all their experience in other diagnoses, for example, cerebral palsy.
Well, it seems that a multidisciplinary approach is really essential with chronic pain management in children and adults. So thinking that the simpler model of acute nociceptive pain where we offer analgesia and relieve the pain, it doesn't work when we're looking at chronic pain from really any origin. So thinking about the psychological effort that the individual must learn to, in a sense, be an active participant in the pain management, psychologists are a very helpful part or essential part of the multidisciplinary team, and thinking non-pharmacologic interventions that the person has an active role in initiating and participating in, and then the other aspects of life. So thinking that depression is a reflection of that individual's lack of success in engaging with the world, that for many people, a way of becoming distracted from pain is to be more engaged with the world, and fatigue and depression are obviously obstacles to that. So I think that with chronic pain, we don't have the luxury of thinking that a prescription will cure the issue, and working with a multidisciplinary approach of individuals who are in close contact to manage the clinical side of the person's case through good communication, that seems the best way to engage that person in moving forward.
Wilma, at the end of the article, you mentioned about the future directions, including more effective interventions, so one could see that as ways of trying to help once the pain's there. I can see a large amount of work is required for that. You also mentioned developing preventative measures. How can one do that? Because presumably it might take 20 or 30 years to know whether they work.
Yes, that's very difficult to find out, but I think we need to learn them young. So adolescents or young adults need to also learn to prevent and self-manage their body better. Like now what I see in adults with cerebral palsy, for example, is a lot of overuse syndrome, maybe like arthrosis, arthritis, and we can learn them to, well, no overuse, do sports, take care of your body, things like that. And also maybe some prevention with very light measures like orthopedic shoes. And the things we discussed before, like coping with your complaints. So it's not one direction. I think we need to look at that in a multidisciplinary way. Maybe another aspect is worth mentioning is what we also lack is information about orthopedic surgery in adults, but also very difficult and not an area in which we will have results very soon.
I think to follow up on that as well, in isolated procedures, we often are imagining that the pain is in isolation of the rest of the child or adult's life. So if we have a one single painful procedure and we're considering that analgesia perhaps is not essential, I think that that's part of this prevention, that perhaps we won't have evidence in 20 years to know whether we were successful. But I think theoretically to think that the acute nociceptive experiences that we prevent from infancy on are helping to prevent contributions to these recurrent nociceptive experiences resulting in chronic pain.
Thank you. Are there any other particular points that Wilmer or John, either of you would like to make? Did you want to mention about aiming research at symptom clusters, Wilmer?
I think because of the variety of health issues in adults with cerebral palsy, I think it's so many that we need to study symptom clusters and also treat symptom clusters before or in the meanwhile while we are doing research. So that's why I brought up things like cognitive behavioral therapy, for example.
I'd only add that looking at the reference paper, the PICAVE, I'm not sure how to pronounce, the 2003 Netherlands Musculoskeletal Pain reference article, they did a 12-month look back, including pain over the prior 12 months. So in a sense, it's likely that the pain they described in the general population was perhaps even lower than what you would be comparing fairly from your paper. So I think that dramatically higher prevalence of pain that you described, Dr. Ventslot, I think there's probably even a higher than the general population. It's just hard to find the really good equivalent comparisons.
I agree with you, and in the paper it's written that 68% of the adults with cerebral palsy had pain longer than 1 year, and that's not in the Dutch paper you refer to.
Very good.
We've now come to the end of our podcast time. Thank you very much, both Dr. Wilmer van der Slot and Dr. John Budu, for a really important discussion on a major topic. I think pain is something that it feels as if it should be treatable. It's such an unpleasant thing for anyone to experience, especially chronic pain. It does feel very important that we should try and do more about it. I'm very glad this research is helping to push that agenda forward. I hope everyone listening will find it helpful, and it will affect a lot of our daily practice. Just to remind listeners that the article is entitled Chronic Pain, Fatigue and Depressive Symptoms in Adults with Spastic Bilateral Cerebral Palsy by van der Slot et al., and it's in the September issue. Thank you very much.